Let's go to Ephesians, the fifth chapter. Ephesians 5. As we continue to study the science of love as revealed in the Christian home. Ephesians 5:25 beginning. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it. 31st verse. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. This is a great mystery. The mysterious union between one man and one woman in the home, the mysterious union of marriage, is presented here by the inspired apostle as a symbol of the union between Christ and his church. And speaking of both, he says this is a what? This is a mystery. This is a mystery. Now, in the New Testament, the word mystery does not mean something that nobody ever understands. The word mystery is applied to that which is known only to the initiated. It is something that can be known, but known only by those who experience it, who enter into the mystery. Now, the apostle is telling us here that it is possible for one man and one woman to share that mystery. We've been studying the home as a little heaven on earth, a little heaven to go to heaven in. We've been studying it as a little copy in this world of God's great home above. For the purpose of our study this afternoon, I would like to have you think of this mystery of the union between husband and wife as represented and illustrated by the mystery of the Most Holy Place. As the Most Holy Place was the central point of the whole sanctuary service, so the union of one man with one woman is fundamental in the structure and in the experience of the Christian home. I might just mention here, so that you get the picture, that I see further parallels in the other areas. For example, the sanctuary as a whole we may think of as the family. The sanctuary with the court surrounding it we may think of as the church. And outside we may think of as the world. Now, there is a type of love, an expression of love that is proper in each one of those areas. There is a love that we're to have for everybody in the world. The Good Samaritan, as he passed on the Jericho road, saw that wounded man by the wayside. He didn't stop to ask who he was, or whether he belonged to his nation, his race, his church, his religion. He was a human being that needed help. He gave him what he needed. That was love, wasn't it? Love in action. And this is as broad as the world. But there is a type of love that belongs to brothers and sisters in the church that doesn't belong to the world at all. You can meditate on the difference in those two things. For example, we are not to find our close friends in the world. The friendship of this world is enmity with God, James 4:4. We're to reach out to be friendly with the world in the sense that we extend a helping hand to them. But we do not experience fellowship there. Fellowship is inside the court, inside the church. Another illustration of this. 2 Corinthians 6:14, be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. A true Christian will not even consider marrying a non-Christian. Is that correct? We won't take a lot of time on that. You're familiar. It'd be well for you to look up some references on that. They're covered very clearly in Adventist Home, Messages to Young People. My point is that there is a closeness within the circle of the church which should never be considered out in the world as to friendship and association and love. But there is a closeness within the family that is not found in the church as far as the expression of love is concerned. We'll study more of this as we go along. So I want you to think of these various areas. But keep in mind this, the center of it all, and that which gives meaning to the whole, is that inner mystery of the most holy place. And as the home is the sanctuary of the affections, so, as we look at this most holy place, we think, dear friends, of this mystery of union between man and woman. The most holy place of a woman's heart is to be entered by only one man. I want to repeat that expression, that statement. The most holy place of a woman's heart is to be entered by only one man. And of course, the converse is true. The most holy place of a man's heart is to be entered by only one woman. Now, we say, where is the proof for this? It rests fundamentally in the law of God, in the seventh commandment, Exodus the 20th chapter and the 14th verse. Four words. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Five words. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Now, I want you to think of this a little here and analyze this. Adultery comes from the same root. We get the word adulterate. And what does adulterate mean? The dictionary says to adulterate is to make impure or inferior by admixture of other ingredients. Very much to the point. To make impure or inferior by admixture of other ingredients. Now, if you look in the dictionary, you'll find that this word adultery, adulterate, adulteration, it comes from two Latin words, ad, meaning to, and alter, meaning other, or different. A turning to something or somebody other than belongs there, this is adulteration, adultery. And to do that is to adulterate, to make impure or inferior by admixture of other ingredients. Now, the seventh commandment then forbids any adulteration. Then we ask, how many are to be included? You notice in the fifth chapter of Ephesians that we've just read, the Bible makes it clear in the 31st verse, for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and shall be joined unto his wife, and they two, not three or half a dozen, they two shall be what? One flesh. This is God's plan, my friends. And anything different is adultery. It's adulteration. And this the law of God forbids. Now we all understand this more or less, some more, some less, but I want to tell you something. I dare to say, and I'm including the teacher of the class, I dare to say that none of us here has fully grasped all that there is in this wonderful principle. Wonderful principle. And I invite you to study it with me, not merely today, but in the coming classes. Because whatever God does, He has tremendous reasons for. May I point out to you, friends, that this is a unique relationship. A unique relationship. Other human relationships, we may have more or fewer. For instance, a father and mother, they may have one child, two, three, four, half a dozen, a dozen. That's all right. There is nothing about that that dilutes the quality of the love. When a father and mother have two children, they don't take the love and split it in half. And each one only gets half of what one would get if there were only one. Do they? Why, no. No. And so with brothers and sisters. Brothers and sisters, they may have just, there may be just two of them or a half a dozen or a dozen, and that all works out fine. There's love enough to go around. And so with uncles and aunts and cousins and all the rest. But here we come to a relationship which, may I say, is just the opposite. It is exclusive, commanded to be exclusive. Now you remember in the Bible times, in certain ages, there was polygamy, and what a curse it was. You know, here's a man, he takes two women. Now let me tell you something interesting. Not only does each woman in that case not get a full amount like a child would get with a parent, each one doesn't even get half as much. Why? Because God didn't make it that way. That's the answer. That's the only answer. It's not a matter of reasoning it out in human philosophy. God has made it that way. They too shall be one flesh. They too, not they three, four, half a dozen. And you think of the sorrows in Jacob's family. Think of the sorrows in David's family. And they're written down there in the Bible to teach us this very lesson. Thou shalt not commit adultery. They too shall be one flesh. Not several. Now, in the world around us today, while there's a certain amount of unofficial polygamy, fornication, there is a tremendous amount of what may be thought of as consecutive polygamy. Here, a couple, they're married for a time, and then they separate, get a divorce, and each one gets another partner, and so on and on and on. And in some ways, you notice I said in some ways this is even worse than polygamy. It's very hard on the children, very hard. And if you have time, read the pages on divorce here in Adventist Home. In this class, I can only introduce these great subjects and give us a background of certain principles. But there is room for a great deal of reading outside of the material we're covering. All right. We are on then this fundamental fact that the inner place of the home, the most holy place, is the union of one man with one woman. And there is a mystery there which is known only by those who experience it. Oh, somebody says, but I want to know about it, and I'm not married. Well, dear ones, if you would just let me say this very kindly, there is no way of knowing it without being married. Oh, well, then I want to get married quick. Well, then I hasten to tell you this, my friends. Most of the people who are married have never known the mystery. Oh. Oh. Yes, this is true. You'll understand this more fully as we continue with our class. And so just getting married doesn't make people know the mystery. No, it is the mystery of love. It is the mystery of the blended life. It is the mystery of two natures joined together so that they become one. And I may say, dear friends, that this is something that even when people are led by God, the Lord Himself has planned for them to be married. Nevertheless, they don't learn all about it at once. You might just like to notice 105 of Adventist Home. Take a look at that. Adventist Home, page 105. To gain a proper understanding of the marriage relation is the work of a lifetime. How long? Those who marry enter a school from which they are never in this life to be graduated. And then the next paragraph, the last sentence of the second paragraph. The real union of the two in wedlock is the work of the after years. Very well then. Now, I wish you'd look at Adventist Home, page 177. 177. We're dealing now, remember, with the most holy place. And the world is not in there. And the other members of the church are not in there. And the other members of the family are not in there. The children are not in there. The grandparents are not in there. Nobody else is in there. Just the husband and the wife. They too. Now we'll read it in plain English, not in symbolism, but literally. 177, Adventist Home. There is a sacred circle around every family which should be preserved. No other one has any right in that sacred circle. The husband and wife should be all to each other. That's quite a bit, isn't it? And you see, if a husband gives part of it to somebody else, then he's not giving all to his wife. And if a wife gives part of it to some other man, or anybody else, man or woman, then she's not giving it all to her husband. There is something about this kind of love, this expression of love, which I repeat, by its very nature, is exclusive. And let me explain one of God's great purposes in this. It is to give us a picture of the exclusive relationship between God and each soul. God admits of no rivals. The first commandment is clear, thou shalt have no other gods before me. And in the second commandment, he sets himself forth as a jealous God. And as a husband is jealous that lest of anyone who would attempt to invade the home, he's jealous about his wife. Properly. I know there's a selfish, insane jealousy. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a true love jealousy. And as a true husband has that, and a true wife, God has that attitude toward us. See, nobody in this world is to share the place in your heart that's made for God. There is a room in your heart, let me put it this way, a throne room that nobody but God is to occupy. Nobody but God is to occupy. We studied at the close of our lesson the other day, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with what? All thy heart. That's it. And here in the married state, we have a beautiful and wonderful and mysterious illustration of this. So, back to our statement. There is a sacred circle around every family which should be preserved. No other one has any right in that sacred circle. And it means just exactly what it says. No other one. Nobody. Nobody. The husband and wife should be all to each other. the wife should have no secrets to keep from her husband and let others know. And the husband should have no secrets to keep from his wife to relate to others. The heart of his wife should be the grave for the faults of her husband. And the heart of the husband the grave for his wife's faults. Tell me, friends, in the ancient sanctuary, did they have a place in there to cover up sin? You know what sins were covered with? Blood. And the blood represents the life. And the life is love. That's what it takes to cover sin. Above all things, have fervent love among yourselves, for love shall cover the multitude of sins. 1 Peter 4:7. Oh, friends, it's a wonderful thing to know that somebody loves you enough that you are perfectly safe. I was telling my audience out in California a few days ago that you could visit with my wife for weeks at a time and you'd never find out any about my faults. You'd never hear her say one thing about my faults or mistake. And it isn't that she has such a wonderful husband. She just loves me, that's all. I'm perfectly safe. Now she knows. Here's the interesting thing. She knows more about my faults than anybody in the world. Yeah? But I'm just as safe as I can be. I don't have to wonder, well, I wonder what she's telling about my faults. I'm perfectly safe. Isn't that nice? Oh, how good the Lord is. The heart of his wife should be the grave for the faults of the husband, and the heart of the husband the grave for his wife. Faults. Never should either party indulge in a joke at the expense of the other's feelings. Did you ever see that happen? Oh, dear one, the world is full of it today. I have been shown, last sentence, that there should be a sacred shield around every family. Now notice the next paragraph, how it backs this up. The home circle should be regarded as a sacred place, a symbol of heaven, a mirror in which to reflect ourselves. Friends and acquaintances we may have, but in the home life they are not to meddle. They belong out, they're in the family in the holy place. If they're not, either in the court or out in the camp or on out somewhere, out in the most holy place. Friends and acquaintances we may have, but in the home life, they are not to meddle. 337, the same book. You see, a little bit later on in this class, I'm going to be studying with you how to find and marry the proper mate. But we're not prepared to understand how to find and marry the proper mate until we study a bit of what it's all about. 337, Adventist Home, bottom of the page. Oh, how many lives are made bitter by the breaking down of the walls which enclose the privacies of every family, and which are calculated to preserve its purity and sanctity. Tell me, friends, what would you think about one of the priests making a hole in one of the walls of the most holy place and inviting people to come up and take a look? That would be sacrilege, wouldn't it, friend? Yes. He would have died. That's what would have happened. Oh, how many lives are made bitter by the breaking down of the walls which enclose the privacies of every family and which are calculated to preserve its purity and sanctity. Read the whole paragraph. And then turn over in 338. First paragraph, when a woman relates her family troubles or complains of her husband to another man, she violates her marriage vows. Oh, is that what it says? Did I read it right? That's right. She dishonors her husband and breaks down the wall erected to preserve the sanctity of the marriage relation. Read the whole paragraph. Well, dear friends, I thank the Lord that there is a sanctuary. I thank the Lord there's a most holy place. I thank the Lord for the glory that's there. And I thank the Lord for the walls and the veils which enclose the privacies, the intimacies, the mysteries of that wonderful union.